Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up, we're back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday for another week, another episode, and we got a big show lined up for you tonight. For everyone that's interested in truth, this is the show to listen to. Tonight we've got some words on the situation. Well, what's been going on? We're going to be talking about wind farms. We're going to be talking about the law of peace and a whole lot more. We're going to have Tak Hokotote on a bit later on in the show. He's going to be talking about his website, where he's going to be talking about a whole lot of information, and we're going to also play the latest headline from Kevin Annan in the International Tribunal into the crimes of the church and state. It's a summons for the Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, so it's going to be an interesting thing to play. But I think first up on the show, what we're going to start off with this week is actually some audio here that we're going to be playing from featuring the Professor David Schneiderman of the U of T Faculty of Law, and also the filmmaker Adam Letalic, who made the Under Occupation G20 Operation documentary. Now, this is audio that from Monday, because on Monday there was a freedom of expression in the G20 from the summits to today. It was an event on Monday, January 17th at the U of T Faculty of Law, Lavelle House, and it was a screening of the G20 Exposed documentary, also known as Under Occupation, Toronto G20 Operation. And after the movie was, it was actually really only 20 minutes of the movie was played. And then after the movie was played, there was a bit of discussion, and then there was some presentations. And the presentations were by the lawyer for Alex Hundert, who's been accused in the G20 of vast conspiracy, I guess, with also the professor, David Schneiderman, was one of the people that talked at the event. And it was a lot of law students, I guess, that were at the event. And then Adam Letalic, who invited me because I'd interviewed him in the past on the show, and he used some footage from my YouTube channel, Support Local Scene, on the movie in the documentary Under Occupation. We're going to get into those. We're going to get into some interviews and that stuff right coming up next. But I think first up, it might be good to just play a cart here, because we have upcoming here on CKLN 88.1 FM. There is a resumption of the AGM, the annual general meeting. And
CKLN Radio will be having a general meeting and elections to its board of directors on Monday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Ryerson Student Center, 55 Gould Street. We will be electing 4 volunteer staff and 4 general community members to the board. To be eligible to participate in the meeting, you must be either A, a Ryerson student in a program leading to a degree, diploma, or certificate. B, paid staff of CKLN, or volunteer who has performed 6 hours of work within the past 12 months and has signed a volunteer contract. Or C, a general community member who has donated at least $25 to CKLN between January 24, 2010 and January 24, 2011. For more information, please see our website at www.ckln.fm. Again, CKLN is holding its general meeting and board elections on Monday, January 31st at 7 p.m. at the Ryerson Student Center, 55 Gould Street.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and we're going to get into this right now, the G20 Occupation event, Freedom of Expression event at U of T. Here is Professor David Schneiderman. Here's his thoughts after the screening here of the G20 Exposed, G20 Under Occupation. Here is that interview. Daniel Levy here. We've got a guest here. We're at the U of T Law School. We just saw the G20 Exposed, the Freedom of Expression event. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. I'm David Schneiderman. I teach constitutional law at the University of Toronto.
Nice. And what did you think about the event? We saw a bit of the movie G20 Exposed, G20 Operation. What did you think?
Well, Adam's documentary made my blood boil. It's fabulous that he was able to collect all of that important documentation. And that kind of work keeps things on the front burner, which is an important project, I think, in the aftermath when the G20 events tend to recede to the back of our minds.
Right, right. And you mentioned that you're a constitutional law professor, and we've heard of a lot about what's happened in the G20, some shocking things, and there was also shocking things revealed in the Ombudsman report by the Ombudsman of Ontario. Do you have any comments on what's been going on? What are your thoughts?
Well, on the Ombudsman's report, we owe the Ombudsman, I think, a great deal of thanks for having dug around in internal Ontario Ministry emails and documentation. The Ombudsman lays down interesting timelines and also rationales that were offered for the secret regulation under the Ontario Public Works Protection Act that only came to be known once a York University graduate student, Dave Vasey, was stopped and arrested at the fence on Thursday for failing to identify himself, invoking his constitutional right not to identify himself, and then being arrested and charged under that 1939 law that was enacted to protect Ontario public works buildings, transmission lines, and such, once Canada declared war against Germany. So it was the invocation of that act that then gave rise to the Ombudsman's investigation. And the report's really treasure trove of details about what the police and Ontario officials were thinking. And what we learned principally from the Ombudsman's report is that there was no need to invoke the Ontario Act, that in fact the Toronto Police Service and the Ontario Provincial Police, who declined actually to request the aid of that, an extra authority of that act, both were of the belief that the powers under that act would be helpful and perhaps add legal clarity, but really were unnecessary. And I think the Ombudsman's report makes clear that this was an exaggerated use of authority without any good justification. The Ombudsman undertakes a constitutional analysis applying the guarantee of freedom of expression under Canada's Constitution, and he concludes that not only was there a limitation or abridgment of Canadian free speech rights, he finds that the justifications offered don't meet constitutional standards. That is, that there's no real defensible constitutional justification for limiting free speech in these circumstances based on the arguments that were made in the lead up to the G20 event.
Right, right. And the shocking thing that he reveals, you know, talking about over 1,000 people arrested, and then he, at the time of when he released this Cotton Act report, he was talking about that there was less than 100 charges still going on. So that's over 90, something like 90% of the people, you know, just totally released charges, you know, charges dropped. When this happens, can the police officers that are doing the arrests get in any trouble for this? Like, is there any recourse that all these people that were arrested and charged and everything was dropped? Like, is there anything, what do you think about this as a person that studies law?
Well, it's regrettable that the oversight of Toronto Police Force isn't more aggressive, so that officers involved in many of these unconstitutional activities, we can guess probably 900 people were unconstitutionally arrested or detained or charged that weekend. We would hope that independent police oversight would provide kind of aggressive disciplining of police forces in the aftermath of the G20. We haven't seen that. Really, it's only at the behest of newspapers like the Toronto Star that they seem to be taking any kind of action. Beyond that, the hundreds of people who were dehumanized during the G20 events, kettled on Sunday, for instance, in the pouring rain for several hours, some of their interests might be vindicated by some of the class action suits that have been launched, at least a couple I'm aware of, that might be able to address some of these illegal and unconstitutional actions. These class actions are taken by one individual on behalf of a class of individuals, namely all those who may have been similarly affected by police actions that weekend. The hope is that a court will come to vindicate constitutional rights and may award what are called charter damages against the police, which would award them some sum of money. It needn't be very large, because cumulatively it may amount to a large sum and should be a huge embarrassment to public authorities in Ontario if it were to be so awarded. So that's where some of the hope lies, is through some of these class action lawsuits. Perhaps in the few prosecutions that will proceed, there might be some vindication of constitutional rights. Ultimately, we probably need some kind of independent inquiry that is not focused on any one specific element of the G20 weekend, like the Ombudsman's report, which was focused specifically on the Ontario regulation issued under the Public Works Protection Act. We need something much more broad-based and that would cover multiple levels of government.
And what did you think about the Ombudsman's, I think it's recommendation number one was actually to revise or replace the Act, Public Works Protection Act. What do you think about that?
Well, that one's a pretty easy one. The Act is largely not used outside of Ontario courthouses and the Ontario Provincial Legislature. I mean, the Act largely has fallen into disuse. Nobody knew about it, but some insiders in the Toronto Police Service and the Ontario Provincial Police Force. So if it's not used, then it's not necessary. So that's a pretty easy case, it seems to me.
Right. And the last thing I was wondering here is just because we're at the U of T Law School here at Flavelle House, and I was wondering, what are you thinking about the next generation here, the students? Like, are students of the law, are they taking this G20 issue as something they're studying? Like, what do you think about the students of today and this whole G20 issue?
Well, it's a great question. The fact that we had this forum here in January 2011, I think, speaks to the engagement of University of Toronto Law students with the issues that were raised in the summer of 2010. There's a significantly sized working group that is conducting research, and that research is being funneled into various other organizations like the Canadian Civil Liberties Association or the Ontario Bar Association as they make recommendations for law reform. It's wonderful that our students are putting their skills to work on behalf of vindicating constitutional rights and trying to remedy our legal structure so this kind of thing doesn't happen again. I suspect there would have been more engagement if law students were around in the summer of 2010. Typically they disperse. There are no classes held here. And of course the University of Toronto itself shut down that very weekend so that there wouldn't be any staff or faculty available. We were prohibited from actually entering our offices that weekend. So the fact that the law students here continue to be interested in the issue, I think, is a great credit to their political awareness and legal skills. And the hope is that as this carries on, they'll continue to be interested, because this is no mere 6-month or year long project. It's going to take, I fear, much longer than that.
For real, yeah. Thanks a lot for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Word up. So we're back here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. That was Professor David Schneiderman of the U of T Faculty of Law. And that interview took place after the screening of the G20 Exposed, a snippet of the movie, and then also, you know, a discussion about the law aspects, the legal aspects, just trying to give you a some different viewpoints here on the Word of Mouth Wednesday with all the G20 talk that we've had. Why don't we throw it to an interview with the filmmaker of G20 Under Occupation? Now, this is an interview right here with Adam Letalic, who you've heard on the show in the past, talking about the G20 Toronto Exposed movie. Well, here is a bit of the interview with Adam from Monday after the interview. This one is outside of Flavelle House, just in the front of Flavelle House. When I interviewed David Schneiderman, he was in one of the classrooms. It was in one of the classrooms. But here is here's Adam right in front of the building there, U of T. Word of Mouth Wednesday, 7 to 8 p.m. on CKLN 80.
Word of Mouth Wednesday, we're here. We got the director here of one of the top movies you'll see in Toronto, G20 Toronto, formerly known as the G20 Toronto Exposed, now known as the Under Occupation G20 Operation. Adam, what's the word?
There's just an event here at the U of T Law School, the Asper Center, and it was organized by a student group working on G20 matters. So it was about an hour and a half event. I got to speak for a few minutes, and I showed 20 minutes of my movie. So I showed the chapter 9, which was the kettling at Queen and Spadina. And then we also had one of Alex Hundert's lawyers. So he was there talking about all the stuff that he's gone through. And then we had also a professor here at U of T talk about some of the constitutional issues, and then we had a few questions, and it was a really great event.
How about the other presentations? Did you learn anything? Was there anything that stood out for you?
Well, clearly all the stuff that's happening to Alex Hundred and these 19 other people charged with conspiracy, the lawyer really explained how really quite ridiculous all this was, and the police were way out of line with the way that they're pursuing these conspiracy charges. And as it turned out, what I sort of found interesting was he said that the most serious charge that Alex Hundred is now facing is that he apparently wrote down the license plate numbers of some of the Crown prosecutors. So that actually is turning out to be the more serious charge that he's facing, even more serious than his initial G20 ones. So actually, I don't know what evidence there is of him doing this or what he meant by that, but, you know, hopefully he'll be acquitted of all this nonsense.
For real, yeah, and you can get a lot more information if you check out the documentary that you made here, Adam. That's one thing that I was wondering about, though, just because there's some confusion, because people know G20 Toronto Exposed, and now we've got a different title here. I guess, why was the title changed for that?
Basically, I started initially a blog after the G20, and it was Toronto G20 Exposed.blogspot.com. And then I initially called my movie the Toronto G20 Exposed, and I had released a bunch of various versions, so because I really wanted to get this information out really quickly. So the first version was, you know, really poorly edited together and really poorly made, and as the months went by, as more footage came out, as I had more time to edit it, I kept editing it and updating it. And so now that I've had this final version, I decided to re-release it under a new website, Under Occupation, because I got underoccupation.com.
And I know you got some clips there in the G20 Occupation that weren't in the original G20 Exposed, with Queen's Park politicians speaking out on this topic of the G20. What do you think about the local politics in the G20 and like these new clips, I guess, that you've added from the original?
Well, yeah, I added a few clips from Peter Cormos and Andrea Horwath from the NDP, because they gave some really great speeches. I'm not an NDP supporter, again, I'm a libertarian, and actually NDP is sort of very far left and, kind of communist, which I'm against. Though I'm not for the conservatives or the liberals either. I'm not sort of a political atheist, I guess, when it comes to the mainstream political parties. But the NDP does deserve a heck of a lot of credit for, for speaking out, because especially people like Peter Cormos, a lot of people from the NDP are saying all the right things, and so I totally support what they're saying about the G20. I'm glad that someone is. Now, the only thing I wonder is they happen to be the party that's not in power, and it was the conservatives and the liberals sort of in power, with the conservatives at the federal level and the liberals at the provincial level. So, you know, if we had an NDP provincial government, maybe it would be the Liberals speaking out, and, you know, so you don't know, but at least, you know, they're the ones saying the right things right now. But certainly, the NDP people deserve a lot of respect, and, you know, they're saying a lot of the same things we are. They're not really holding back much. They're raising all of the right issues and the right points, and they're the ones pushing for a public inquiry, and when it comes to the votes, you know, all the NDP people voted for a public inquiry, all the Conservatives and Liberals voted against it, and that's why we don't have an inquiry right now, you know. So I don't know if we're going to be able to sway the other people, you know, in the other parties to come along, but it's certainly, the NDP's have been great.
For real, yeah, and just trying to get the truth out here, your website, underoccupation.com, I noticed that there was, since the last time we talked to you, there has been a new video update. I guess, what is your latest?
The latest one is called Global Hostile Takeover. It's online, it's on YouTube. I got to get my webmaster to put it actually up on the website, but it should be up shortly. But it's on YouTube, and it's all about sort of the formation of a world government, which is sort of what the G20 is. Even Herman Van Rompuy said the G20 is the world government. It talks a lot about the formation of a world currency, global regulations, things like that. It also talks a lot about the coming collapse of the U.S. dollar and hyperinflation in the U.S. It, interviews, I have clips from a lot of financial experts who basically lay it out why hyperinflation is eventually inevitable, and that the debt load not just the funded debt, but in particular the unfunded liabilities of Social Security, Medicare, are running in the tens of trillions of dollars. There's really no political will to reduce the size of these entitlement programs. They're likely just to print the money. So instead of actually defaulting on their debt, they'll rev up the printing presses, the Federal Reserve will monetize probably all the debt, the currency will become worthless, and that will sort of lead us to this crisis and this breakdown in society. We'll have probably a lot of civil disobedience, riots in the streets, we're already seeing this, and that's sort of why they're gearing this police state up, which is what we saw in Toronto. We saw their police state, and I think this is sort of training for when the real event happens. They want their martial law police state to be able to sort of keep control on society once it ultimately collapses due to the economic situations that were brought about. And I also make the point that this is also being done, in my opinion, being done deliberately, that this is the deliberate bankrupting of the Western world so that the people in power, who we, you know, refer to, and they refer to themselves sometimes as the New World Order, they're going to be coming in. There's going to be a lot of angry baby boomers who thought they were going to get all these retirement packages from the government. They thought they were going to get all these pensions, free health care, all this stuff. I don't think they're going to get any of that. They'll maybe get a little bit, or they'll get it for a few more years, but eventually they're not really going to be getting anything of value. Their checks aren't going to buy anything at the stores. People are going to be really upset about this. You know, there'll probably be protests, riots, and that's why they have a police state then to crack down, to try and restore law and order and set up this new sort of high-tech tyranny that, you know, we're already sort of seeing at the airports. That will sort of be rolled out onto the streets to keep everyone in their place.
Speaking the truth, we're talking about justice for all the people involved in that were caught in the act, and we're outside the U of T Faculty of Law building. Speaking with Adam, do you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name's Adam Letelik. I was born in Halifax, raised here in Toronto. I went to University of British Columbia, so I was out in Vancouver. Now I'm back here.
What's your website again?
The website's www.underoccupation.com.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dan.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. So check out the Under Occupation documentary, Toronto Operation, Under Occupation, G20 Operation, I should say, is at underoccupation.com. It's also on YouTube, and that is basically just a bit there on what has gone on, you know, all the way from G20 Toronto exposed to this Under Occupation to being screened at the U of T Faculty of Law, so the law students are getting a taste of what it was like on what's come to be known as Canada's worst weekend, or, you know, one of the biggest appearances of the New World Order here in the local area. Now we're in Toronto, but we're going to be hopefully getting a guest on the phone who is looking over a lot of the eastern door, I guess, of the Turtle Island. So we're going to try to get Tohoki Tote on the line after we just play a music track here by Project for Peace called We Are Still Here, which Tohoki Tote is involved with making this track. So it's some good music here. Project for Peace, We Are Still Here. And then we'll be right back. The Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up. Word of mouth. Word is bond. Keeping it real. It's about 7:25 p.m.
Now, proud and brave, remembering the lessons my ancestors gave about acknowledgement and respect in the four races as they intersect. From the path behind us to the one that lies ahead, let us walk softly on the road we'll take. as we move along, thinking with one mind as we sing our song. We're glad to say, we say loud and clear, through all the sadness, we are still here.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. That was a Project for Peace track. We are still here, and we're back here on the show. And this is going to be a good segment for everyone that's interested in truth, because we're keeping a watch out, and our next guest has actually been keeping a watch on the Turtle Island, on areas. Well, he's going to tell us what's been going on in his area, and what we can look out for here in 2011, judging by, our calendar, we got right here, on the line is, joining us is Tahoki Tote. Hello, Tahoki Tote.
Yes, Tahoki Tote.
Tahoki Tote, yeah, right. And, I actually got your contact information from, a YouTube comment that you posted on one of the videos I uploaded, and we actually played some of the audio a few weeks ago on a presentation about the industrial wind turbines that have been going up all around Ontario. And you had mentioned that you've got some of these in your area. So I guess what are your thoughts on the wind turbines issue, and like how did you get involved with this issue?
Oh, it goes right back to the very first one. I had moved up here to what we call Ganigoda, the headwaters of the Grand River, which people call the Haldimand Proclamation land. which really is a royal protectorate, a British protectorate for us and our children. So I moved up here in 2000. And then, I guess about 2005, they started talking about putting windmills up. And I was in Hornings Mills living there. And they were having a hearing in Hornings Mills about it. So I showed up and I told them, hey, you know what? First thing I said at this OMB hearing, I said to the, what do you call them, adjudicator, I guess. I said, do you follow the Constitution of Canada? He said, yes. I said, and you follow international law? He said, yeah. I said, okay, Section 35, and I read it to him. You have to do proper consultation with the natives where you're doing projects. And that's us, so why haven't you done that? They ruled for Canadian hydro developers, and I only did that for one reason, to prove to the people the illusion of you don't have a constitution. It never has been ratified. So if they did follow the Constitution, they would have followed it right there. But they didn't follow the Constitution because you don't have one. It's never been ratified. They don't have to follow it in Admiralty Court. They just pretend that you have it. It's all pretend. So that's why I did that, to show everyone, hey, you know what? They'll do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that was before the first windmill went up. I think you've seen my video on YouTube, me at that OMB hearing, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm not making this stuff up. This is all true stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, these people have chose to ignore us, including every government official. And I have read aloud in the Melanchthon Council the Royal Proclamation 1784 signed by Frederick Haldimand, Captain General, which people don't even know how high that rank is. They no longer had that rank in end of the 1700s because it was as much power as the king. It's a royal proclamation. So it's in effect, and, you know, people have to, okay, I guess the question should be for these people who I put on notice, like many of them, including your mayor.
Mm-hmm.
I put everyone notice, hey, this is a royal proclamation, supersedes admiralty law. You know, and that's all your courts are admiralty law. So you need a British military general here, just like what happened in Israel. That's how Israel was created, from a royal proclamation. The British generals followed the Royal Proclamation, 1917, Balfour Declaration. They created Israel out of Palestine, as the Royal Proclamation stated. So, anyways, that's how the power of a Royal Proclamation, that's why I bring that up in a recent precedent.
Right, right. So I guess what is going on now, then? If you've been already voicing your opinion before even the first turbine went up, and
before
then now
the
if there's...
One, yeah.
Now if there's like hundreds of them and there's plans to be, you know, thousands, you know, up to 5,000 throughout the province, I guess, like, what's been going on since?
Well, what's been going on, the criminals are running everything. You know, that's really what's going on. And, you know, I'm just trying to, up here in Ganigoda, we are, you know, I can guarantee you jurisdiction is being set. And who has jurisdiction here? The British generals, no one else. And that's what we're setting. It will happen, because when you're trying to ignore the imperial law, that's really what people up here. It's a corporate hostile takeover bid, starting with these windmills, and then the Highland Group, and there's a few corporations up here, but they're all owned by the same people for sure. That's why I say, okay, up here in Ganigoda, there's no more corporatism, no more artificialness. What's a corporation but an artificial entity? That's so the shareholders can hide behind that mask and change mask. I mean, we're going to remove the mask, and the general's going to help us. I can guarantee you that. That's where I'm going with this. And I already said on AVR, you know, the TV channel AVR, They showed up at my house when I was living in Hornings Mills with a TV camera one day. I said, what's this? He says, I want to do a story on the windmills. I said, oh, you got to be joking. He said, no, it's a big story. So anyways, I just got on TV, and I said to them, you put the windmills up on our land. They're attached to the land. They're ours. Thanks for the windmills. I waved at the camera and smiled. I wasn't kidding. Thanks for the windmills. All these people who think they can break the imperial law, I can guarantee you the British generals will always follow the imperial law, because it's not the British Empire. It's the Roman Empire. It's the same empire. It only exists because of everyone follows the military law. And this is jurisdiction of military law. So anyways, that's the big stick that I'm carrying up here in Ganigoda. And I'm the eyes and the ears of the Mohawk up here, and I report on everything that's going up here. So
Awesome. So this is really we're working towards having a British general involved.
Absolutely. That's who has jurisdiction here. No one else. You know, I can give you a direct example of this. So I think I was hearing I listened to that interview you did with Con Ed, and she was talking about the school property that we have been, trying to...
Right, I wanted to ask you about that, yeah.
Right.
This is what we talked about a few weeks ago when we had Cantonita Horn of the Mohawk Nation News, and she was talking about the Etobicoke Outdoor Education Center.
Right, right.
What do you know about it?
I know everything about it. I'm the one who put in the thing saying, okay, as per the Royal Proclamation, this is the property I want. You know, and we gave them notice to vacate that property, Etobicoke Outdoor Education Center. They did. They vacated it. But they didn't give us the keys. 2 years goes by. We still don't got the keys, although numerous times. And then I get a letter from their lawyer of the Toronto District School Board telling me that if I try to trespass on the property, that I will be charged with trespassing under the full extent of admiralty law.
Whoa.
And I sent back to that lawyer Royal Proclamation, a copy of it, Art Archives Canada copy, and the survey I had done at MNR, and I said, Royal Proclamation supersedes admiralty law. You have no jurisdiction. Tell your client I still want the keys, and when do they want to have the pipe ceremony? Because that's what we were working on. It was going to be a peace pipe ceremony. They were going to give me the keys and turn this over properly. But they now, and then, so, up here, I've been... do I know about this? No, of course I do. I lived there on that property for 3 years. I know all about it. I know about it intimately.
Right.
So anyways, then I hear from another source up here, very good, reliable source, inside source, that Jim Flaherty's trying to secure the property for himself. I said, wow, this is about 3 years ago. So I start my watching on that, right? Mm-hmm. And then... Jim Flaherty shows up here in Honeywood. Another couple people, yep, Jim Flaherty was at the Honeywood store. Jim Flaherty. So he's already in there. That's the way I look at it. And so the Finance Minister of Canada is ignoring a royal proclamation, the supreme law of the empire. That's like treasonous. That's bigger than Watergate or any of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I look at it. I mean, that's what I write about. But, I guess we don't have journalists with any, balls out there. I don't know.
Are you thinking that Jim Flaherty is up there working as the finance minister, or is he doing this like as private business for himself?
See, there's no way it's for the finance minister business. There's a group called the Highland Group. They've come up here and they bought 7,000 acres. They're trying to change the official zoning on, from 8,000 acres of aggregate. They're trying to make it into, they're trying to turn rural farming into aggregate, and they're trying to dig. I know exactly what they're doing and who they are. And you know what? They're all going to be answering in the British military tribunal because that's who has jurisdiction. All I want is everyone to follow the law. I am His Majesty's faithful Mohawk Ali, as it states in that proclamation. And I'm here for my grandchild has somewhere to stay up here in the hills because that's where we need to go because it's time to do that. We need to do that now.
Right, and when you were mentioning about a bit about the history of this whole, how this has all happened, you mentioned this guy, Captain General Haldimand, and I know that there's a place referred to, or an area referred to as the Haldimand Tract. Are these connected, the person?
The Haldimand Tract is the tract of land connected with the Royal Proclamation that Captain General Frederick Haldimand wrote. That's called 6 miles from either side of the Grand River, from Lake Erie, either side up to its head. 6 miles surrounding it. That's ours and our posterity forever under British military protectorate rule. So that's why I'm here and why I came here in 2000, long before Caledonia or any of it.
Right, and what was this the Etobicoke like education center, the summer camp from Etobicoke, is that in like the Toronto area or is that up closer to where you are or?
That's right up here where I am. 23 kilometers north of me, where I'm in Shelburne right now.
Wow, so that, in where you're at, is that, and that's also near where this mysterious Highland Group bought the big...
Yes, they bought all the land up here. They think they're going to do a hostile corporate takeover bid of a British military protectorate. I think they're really stupid businessmen. I really do. They've invested a lot of money here doing this. And I think they're really stupid. And I guarantee you, well, you know what, from what happened with Rob Ford, you know, he's been involved from the beginning of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen, you know, I've been waiting to see what Robbie's going to do because I've known him for since he's a kid.
That's who we got to talk about because he's the current mayor of Toronto.
Right,
now.
Right. And I wonder what Rob's going to do. I mean, he's had a historical moment here. And I really want to see because it reminds me of going right back. I grew up right around the corner from Rob at the courts at one of the projects. And we used to play cowboys and Indians. And I remember we were always the Indians and me and my brothers. I had four brothers and we kicked ass. We never lost. And no one wanted to play cowboys and Indians anymore. But now we're playing for real.
Right.
Really, we are. So.
Right. That is the burden of peace, I guess, that you got. You've got your website, the headline, when you go to the taokitote.ws, you have the burden of peace as your headline.
Yes, because that's what we do. You know, we're called Rota Skenragete. That's what we call our men, our warriors. People say, well, that's our warrior society. No, we call Rota Skenragete, means one who carries the burden of peace. That's what we call our men, one who carries the burden of peace.
Right, and it's a great website. You've got a lot of information on here, and the article that you had written on there in the Kenny Kota update, you get into this issue about Rob Ford, and you actually, I think it's about, like, you had a meeting with Rob Ford about this Etobicoke Education Center.
I did.
And he, yeah, and so how was that?
He'll be talking to the general, so they all will be, all of them who've been properly notified.
So it's basically we're at a situation where it's like you're supposed to get the keys, but they haven't given them.
Right.
Right.
And I guess they try to do everything back door. And Rob, I thought, was coming in to clean that all up. I guess we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where I was. I had some hope for Rob Ford, especially with his policy, his policy that he was talking about when he was campaigning about having no secret meetings, no secret deals. I was hoping this
would
be
John F. Kennedy said that before they blew his head off.
Hmm.
His 1961 freedom or speech to the press. Do you know it?
Yeah.
Maybe the best speech ever by any president.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they blew his head off for saying that.
Hmm.
You know. So, anyways.
That's the burden of truth, the burden of peace. And another thing that you had up on your website, you were talking about. Maybe we could talk about one of the articles here. You were talking about the Eagle Watch on the Baffin Island.
Yeah.
And that there's a big iron ore deals that could be going on here. What do you know about this one up north?
Well, you know, this is Eagle Watch's article. I post their articles, of their articles. So I haven't done my in-depth study. I've just read the article like you.
Mm-hmm.
And done a little bit of stuff. I'm so busy. My goodness. I mean, I can't believe, no one pays me. It actually cost me money to do this, so I'm just happy it doesn't cost me too much because I'm doing my duty, my responsibility. I'm spreading the peace. That's what I do.
Right, and that's, so anyways, that's an interesting one for people to look at just
because
yes, you mentioned.
Eagle Watch has, if you look under my section, Freedom Fighters, I got all of Kevin Annette and Eagle Watch's stuff there. Couple other people maybe too, but not much.
Awesome. So I guess I wanted to ask you then about the main article then, The Sky World Cometh.
Okay.
Because this is an important one to think about, not just from a scientific point of view, because you do mention some scientists that have been talking about the like a pole shift, the change in the Earth's magnetism, but then also because there's ancient prophecy involved with this too. What is the Sky World Cometh?
Well, okay, I guess, yeah, you people here in North America. Now, I want to tell you, we're all aware that the Mayan are saying that the next sun is going to be the fifth sun. And people say, what's that? That means the fifth time the Sky World has come back since we've been here. So the fourth sun was the last sun, and that's when the peacemaker came and spread the peace here to Turtle Island. I mean, but if you go back to the first sun, our creation story, we have 500 nations on Turtle Island from all areas of North South America. We all have the same creation story about the Sky Woman falling down and onto the turtle's back and making North America first to Turtle Island and then the other parts of the world. I mean, this is all our creation story. I mean, that, and so that's why when, you know, like in the second sun, then the Sky Woman said, okay, the other parts of the world are ready. She took the black brother, who she made, all were living here, white, yellow, black, and red. And she took the black brother, she put him on another part of the world, said, you will return home to Turtle Island one day. She took the yellow man, she put him on another part of the world, said, you will return home to Turtle Island one day. She took the white man, she put him on another part of the world. She said, you will return home to Turtle Island one day. She left the red man here at Turtle Island. She said, take care of your of Turtle Island for when your brothers come home. That's why when they came, we were just always saying, having feasts, welcome home, younger brothers. That's what we were always called them, our younger brothers. And, you know, they just came in killing, slaughtering, pestilence, thieving, murdering, and called us savages. Funny how that works.
Yeah, that's why we need to see some. That's why we need to see some action. Some, you know, some hope for the future. With, you know, with looking into what's gone on in the past.
Right. And that's like why, the creation story. Mm-hmm. We have a completely different view of everything because of that. Right.
Right.
And see, we come from the sky world in our creation story, and the sky world's way more advanced than here, and. You know, I remember the stories in the first sun here. You know, this is the first people here. The first time the sky world came by and dropped off people, right? This is the first sun. I'm just, you know, I guess trying to make it seem easy to understand or whatever.
Right.
But in the first sun, all the stories were about the people in the sky world. I still remember some of those stories. Those are really cool stories. And when I read some of the Hindu scriptures, I'm thinking, this is it's sky world stories. You know, I like to read. I read a lot.
Right. So
I think everyone should read a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the sky world, it comes through the cosmos on a regular cycle. And it's time according to the Mayan calendar. You know, the Mayan were the keepers of the time. We are the keepers of the law. You know, the American Revolution never happened. People don't understand that. Did you see Avatar?
Yeah.
Well, you see there when they were going in to chop down the tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
The main tree?
Yeah.
Right, with everything they got. Well, in 1779, 12,500 American troops invade Onondaga, the home of the peace. They destroyed everything for 1 year. They stole everything. I'm talking, these people, you know that movie National Treasure? There really is a museum like that in some rich Templar, because that's who the Americans are. They really do have a museum, and they've got all of our stuff. And I really feel sorry for them, because some of those masks that they've stole, they haven't been fed in a long time. And you know that movie, The Mask? This is all real stuff. They got some big problems coming their way, these people. The way we look at it, we've always been saying, welcome home, younger brother. So when you look at it that way, from our creation story, so your younger brother comes home after being away for so long, thinks he knows everything. He's going to take over the whole entire family. What do? Kill your younger brother, or do you try to bring him back to the family? So we've always tried to bring him back to the family, no matter what. It's our younger brother. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people have to understand we're all one. There's no division. Color's an illusion. We're all one. In the first world, in the first sun, we were taught that the babies start in the spirit world. They pick their parents here on Earth, and then they do the thing, then they go back to the spirit world at the end of their journey here on Earth. That's what we were taught from the first son, the old teachings. So think of that and apply it now. So anyone here conceived in North America is Ongwahoe, is the people from here.
Right. We're
native to here. So start thinking like an Indian people. Get up on your feet.
Right. Exactly, yeah, and that's one good place to check then for information then is Tohoki Tote's website, and I'll spell it out after we finish the interview. But just because we're running a bit out of time, and you know you're going to be a great guest to have on in the future too. But I just wanted to prep for the next segment. I want to just play a clip here, the latest segment from Kevin Annett, and you've got it posted too on your website, a link to it. And it's he explains about what the International Tribunal into the Crimes of Church and State are up to with charges in complicity and genocide and summoning the Prime Minister of Canada. Do you have any final words, on anything or on Kevin Annett or just anything you'd like to say for the listeners?
Well, I'd like to say, I guess the first thing that the peacemaker taught us was that on this planet, all living things have the same mother. She's the earth. We all have the same father. He's the source energy, spirit energy. That makes us all brothers and sisters. We're all one. So I'd like to end with that.
Great. Yeah, thanks a lot. Tohoku
Tote. Thank you very much, Daniel.
All right. Peace. Thanks.
Peace.
And that's Tohoku Tote out there in somewhere near Shelburne. He's keeping an eye, though, on a lot of, a lot of Turt Island, like he was saying, and trying to, get all the information out. And that's why I'm going to recommend this website, and I'm going to spell it out for you. If you got a pen or pencil or, your computer handy, then check out http://, and then go to thahoketote.ws, Tohoku Tote. I'll spell it out again. thahoketote.ws. Or just search maybe The Sky World Cometh, and you'll find that article on the Pole Shift, which is an interesting article. But he's got all kinds of articles up on there. The Kenny Kota update for that story about Rob Ford and the keys to the Etobicoke Education Center. You know a bit about this mysterious Highland group. And the work of Kevin Annett, who's been doing a lot of work with Friends and Relatives of the Disappeared, but then also now this newly formed International Tribunal into the Crimes of the Church and State. This is the Kevin Annett's media release from a few days ago, and it's an important one for anybody that has connections with Stephen Harper. If you're in contact with the Prime Minister, let him know that Kevin Annett and the International Tribunal for Crimes of Church and State, ITCCS, is looking for him for a summons, basically, about Canada's history and what is hidden no longer. That's Kevin Annett's other website, Hidden No Longer. Here it is.
This is a breaking news item. January 17th, 2011. Prime Minister Harper to be summoned to tribunal to answer charges of complicity in genocide. Tribunal will launch its own investigation in Canada. London, England. Prime Minister Stephen Harper of Canada is about to be issued a summons by an international tribunal to answer charges of complicity in genocide. And the same tribunal plans to start its own investigation into children who died in Canadian Indian residential schools if Harper doesn't take action by March the 1st. In a letter issued to Harper earlier today, the executive of the newly formed International Tribunal into Crimes of Church and State, the ITCCS, accused Harper and his government of subverting justice and exonerating the churches responsible for the deaths of thousands of children in residential schools. The letter states that if by March 1, 2011, Harper's government has not initiated criminal charges against the Catholic, Anglican, and United churches and begun to repatriate the remains of the dead children, the ITCCS will dispatch its own staff of investigators to Canada. The staff will conduct forensic investigations at alleged mass grave sites near former residential schools, quote, in conjunction with Indigenous elders and families of the victims, unquote, and will gather evidence to indict Canada for genocide. The ITCCS letter concludes by informing Prime Minister Harper that it intends to issue a public summons to him to appear before its opening session in London, England, on September 12, 2011. The tribunal also plans to bring criminal charges against the aforementioned churches. The ITCCS has already issued a summons to Pope Benedict, Joseph Ratzinger, to appear at the September tribunal. A complete copy of the ITCCS letter to Prime Minister Harper follows and is also posted at hiddenfromhistory.org. For more information, contact the ITCCS at genocidetribunal@yahoo.ca or its Canadian field agent, Kevin Annett, at hiddenfromhistory@yahoo.ca.
Word up. So that is Kevin Annett, and you check out Hidden From History, and you can find the links on the hiddenfromhistory.org website to the Hidden No Longer. The book is now available for download, and I haven't finished going through it yet because it's got so much information. But I have downloaded it, so you can download the PDF basically online if you got a computer of Hidden No Longer. And Kevin Annett, when we had him on the show a few weeks ago, was mentioning that he had decided to make the book available for everyone to download for free online because it started disappearing from university libraries, universities that had it in their library. A bunch of them no longer have it, so he's got to get the word out, I guess, if, you know, especially if there's some sort of deliberate, you know, trashing of his books or, you know, whatever, disposal of his books. Well, you got to get the books into more people's hands. So that's why Hidden No Longer is available, and that's got a lot of the information on the reasons for why Stephen Harper's being summoned to this International Tribunal on the Crimes of Church and State, along with the Pope and the Queen of England, and a bunch of people are being summoned. And this is a real thing that's going on. So, you know, that this is the kind of stuff we've been talking about, and that's why it's good to speak with Aoki Tote for our feature interview of the show. And then, you know, that was so it was interesting considering all the stuff that he was saying, in especially in comparison to having that that audio from the G20 on Monday, the G20 screening of the G20 Under Occupation documentary. And I just wanted to thank again Adam Letalik, the filmmaker of the Under Occupation documentary, and Professor David Schneiderman of the U of T Faculty of Law, because, you know, we got to hopefully hope to wake up some of the students here with what's been going on with what happened at the G20, and what's been going on, you know, with everything that's been going on that's you know, that's criminal, that's not being investigated. Well, we're trying to keep an eye out, and that's why I'm going to be promoting another screening of the Toronto G20 Exposed, or the Under Occupation documentary, which is going to be on Friday, February 4th, that Socialist Action is presenting in the Rebel Film Series. But we'll have more information on that later, I think. And then also, you know, next Friday, I guess Friday, January the 28th, there's the Trotsky is going to be played at 7 p.m. Or Friday, February the 11th, they're going to be screening 100 Days of Resistance by Avi Lewis. So for the next few Fridays, the Rebel Film Series is going to be going on, and that's been announced. But I'm going to be one of the speakers, I guess, for the February 4th one. So we'll be talking about that one next week, I guess. And also tomorrow, there's an event. It's a forum, Report Back from Cancun, Thursday, January the 20th, 7 p.m. at Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. It's an eyewitness report and discussion from Cancun, and featuring, or I guess organized by, the Toronto Climate Campaign, Council of Canadians, and the Toronto Bolivia Solidarity Network. That is it for the Word of Mouth Wednesday, and stay tuned to CKLN 88.1 FM for the next show. The Blues Dr. Julie Hill is in the studio. Get ready for The Blue Remedy coming up next. My name's Daniel Libby. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, hopefully. Word up. Much respect. Word is bond. Word out.
Everywhere I go, people running around, trying to get to the top. When the